This is News Director Larissa Donovan. Joining me today for the Meet the Candidates series is a candidate for Beltrami County Sheriff, Jarrett Walton. Welcome to the studios.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to be doing this in person, too. I was just telling you before we started recording that back in 2020, when I initially launched this series, it was all over the phone, all over the place. Getting back into it now. So you are running to be the next sheriff of Beltrami County. I understand you are endorsed by the current sheriff, Beidle. That's his name.
Yes, he wrote, he asked me to run for sheriff because he decided he was going to retire.
And what has, you're the deputy.
The chief deputy.
And so you're kind of like the right-hand man, right?
I work directly underneath the sheriff. He's kind of the vision of it, and I run the day-to-day operations of the entire sheriff's office, which consists of the jail, field operations, dispatch, the courts, and some other divisions as well. So
you're well ingrained to the issues that local law enforcement faces and already.
Yes, part of my job is to deal with those issues and also to shape the direction the sheriff's office is going. You know, as the sheriff is kind of the visionary, my job is to make it happen and to help contribute to the vision as well.
So where do you see law enforcement going?
I think what our goal has been towards the last couple of years is to try to get it towards the fact that we've always felt a need that you need to be very active in your enforcement. You need to hold people accountable. And if they do something wrong, they need to go to our jail. But one of the things that we've noticed is that there's a shortcoming on our end in our jail to try to help them give them either the life skills or the ways to cope with whatever it is. From my time, I did investigations for 6 years. I oversaw the investigation division. And one of the things that I noticed when doing that, a lot of the people who were committing property crimes or even violent crimes had addiction problems or mental health issues. You know, so how do you overcome that? When we have them as a captive audience within our jail, is to provide them services within there. About a year ago, we hired what was called a reset coordinator. So what that is that it's a social worker inside the jail, and her job is to interact with the inmates before they get out and set up resources on the outside for them to kind of give them so a lot of times if you don't have a house to go to, you don't have, you know, your health insurance, you don't have your medications, you fall back in with your old group and you end up falling back to your old habits and doing the drugs and whatnot. So we've set up that we have had her for in August will be a year that she's been doing the job. We did a little bit of training with her on the front end of it all, but that's been successful. We have a couple of success stories where people have stayed clean for I think almost like 6 or 7 months. They're living in a house, they have a job, you know, and these are people that historically have not done that. And it makes me proud as a chief deputy, or even of Amanda, who is our reset coordinator, of what she's been able to accomplish just in that realm. We're also trying to expand that to get more like mental health or chemical dependency counseling into our jail. We're working on a plan right now, and I'm very optimistic that we're gonna be able to pull it off. And if we do, it'll be a huge thing for Beltrami County. Probably be one of the biggest things that I've seen in my career. And I've been doing this for 25 years, and I've been a part of a lot of cool stuff and been involved in a lot of good stuff. But this, hopefully, we can get it to work out and provide more services for people in our jail. We're also trying to gear it more towards a wraparound approach. So if we have them for a finite amount of time, say we have them for 5, 6, 7 days, or sometimes we have them for 30 days. Try to get them services when they're within there, but then when they're on the outside, give them that support system that they need. It's important for them to have support when they're out there. Otherwise, they're going to fall back into their old ways. When I've been out walking around talking to people as part of my campaign, I spoke to an individual who said that he has been clean for 5 years, and he said one of the biggest things was support and accountability. You know, and that's what our goal is to provide that, and also to give them, you know, the support is peer support type stuff, like, you know, you hear the AA type stuff, or there's groups that get together, you know, stuff like that. So, but if we can have a good group of people on the inside and the outside, I think we can make a change. And with that, you're going to have less crime, because a lot of what's driving their criminality is their need to try to get money for their habit or their mental health issues that are going untreated. So we're hoping to do that. And there, a lot of times with that as well, there's a lot of collateral damage that happens with chemical dependency or mental health issues. There's issues at home with family, or they end up getting divorced, or, you know, stuff like that.
Losing kids.
Exactly. You know, and the one thing that I've seen from doing this for 25 years is there's kind of a cycle. You deal with a parent, a kid, the grandkid. I mean, it's a cycle, because it's kind of a learned behavior from having seen it their whole lives as part of their ritual for their life. They've seen their mom, their dad, or whoever with the chemical dependency, so using drugs and doing whatever. So I think that if we can try to cut that down, we can, in the long run, we can save a lot of collateral damage as well. You know, and you know, our goal in law enforcement, before I became chief deputy, I was more on the patrol side of things, where it is their job to hold people accountable, and if they're committing crimes, putting them in jail. And now as my role as chief deputy overseeing the jail, I see how we can do this in a twofold within an enforcement and almost restorative corrections type atmosphere, where we try to restore them while they're in our facility. You know, it's one of those things that for years and years we've done this. Let's try something a little bit different, hopefully to get a different outcome or a better outcome for those people.
So speaking of the jail, there's a big project on the horizon. What are your thoughts and what are your hopes for the jail project, whether it be expanded, remodeled, or a new site?
I'm part of the jail steering committee, which is a committee that's leading this up. I am a member of that. I'm also a member of the finance committee because it's going to cost a substantial amount of money, so we've got to find a way to pay for it. So, you know, where do I see it going? You know, and we're doing our due diligence on this, and we're doing a feasibility study and trying to come up with the best solution that serves our needs and also serves our financial constraints. You know, unfortunately, we are a poor county. We don't have a whole lot of money, so we're trying to do it the right way and make sure that we cover all our bases and check all our boxes before we move forward. You know, and just from, you know, every day when I get up, I check to see what our jail population is, and it's always greater than what our capacity is. Our current capacity in our jail is 118 people. Last Monday I woke up, there was 151 inmates we were responsible for. What that entails is that we have them housed out at other counties, other county jails. It means we have to transport them there, and then we have to pay them like $55 a day to house our inmates at most places. And if we average, we've been averaging probably around 35 to 40 people being housed out of county jail. That's almost $800,000 a year. So it's, and we can't do nothing that our facility only holds 118 people, you know. And historically, we were able to hold more people, but the Minnesota Department of Corrections came down with new standards and stuff, and they ended up taking away our capacity levels, lowering our capacity level. So we've had to deal with that. So, you know, and I'm going to let the feasibility study do its thing, but I can see the direction going that we're going to have a bigger facility. I mean, we're outgrowing the one we have now. And moving forward. And I think we need to, you know, with this, if we do build a new jail, I should say, because it's up to the county commissioners what we do, but is that we do it so that we build in there the spaces we need for the programming, you know, the thing where we can hopefully maybe be a little bit more, have programming that's culturally specific. You know, some of them take more room than others. You know, that's kind of our goal, you know, and I sound kind of like a jail geek, and I never thought I would, but it's become a passion of mine, and it's one of those things that I think we can do a lot of good there and make a lot of difference. So
as far as staffing law enforcement, I know that across multiple sectors, keeping adequate staff has been a challenge. What's your vision for retaining and recruiting deputies here in Beltrami County?
Are you talking just deputies on the roadside or our corrections officers? Well, we're bigger than just
across the board.
Okay. Because from April of 2020 up until current, we've had a turnover. We lost 27 corrections officers, and when we're fully staffed, we have 40 corrections officers. And at one point, we're working with 18 corrections officers. We were working at 45% capacity. So what we did with the leadership from we have a very good county administrator. Him and I pulled together a task force, which consisted of our human resource department, our jail administrator, and a bunch of staff within jail, our jail programmer, our jail sergeant, and that corrections officer, to come up with a solution on how to do this. We came up with several things that we did. One of the things we did was retention pay. We were able to say that if you're working at a certain staffing level, each member will get, I think it was $750 every quarter to help, you know, hopefully retain them. We also did offer, because we have staffing levels we have to work at. The DOC says that we must work with 7 people on every shift. We're working below that, so we had to pay overtime to fill those shifts. So essentially what we did is we had a double overtime incentive, which was that they could do 8 hours in a two-week period. No, it was 6 hours in a two-week period. They could work for double overtime to try to get them to cover the shifts. It was effective. We were able to do that, and we've had a pretty good luck retaining our people. I think the last person we had resigned was in February of this last year. So that's pretty good for us. We've stabilized right now. I think we're, with our prospective employees that we're doing backgrounds on, we might be able to get, I hate to say the F word, full staff. Because I said that one other time, and then we had, and I think it was in 2020, I said that then we had our problems. But that's been very helpful in that as well. You know, and one of the things as far as deputies go, we've had a little bit of turnover there with some retirements and whatnot, is that we're not getting nearly the applicants. We just ran a hiring phase when we had two openings, and we interviewed two people for the job. We used to get 50 people. And that's not uncommon to us here at our sheriff's office. It's a statewide, it's a national thing that's causing this. And we have to work towards having a good environment here. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes I've went to the college a couple different times and spoke to some criminal justice classes trying to recruit for our jail and for our field ops staff. And one of the things that they say that drives it is money. They know right now that it's their market. They know that if they want to go work wherever they can almost write their own check where they go, they're going to go with the best pay and the best benefit. You know, one of the things that we've always done is we've offered good equipment, good training. We have fair wages, but we're not at that, you know, the upper echelon part there. Or, you know, we're actually falling a little bit behind where the standard is. So then people are going elsewhere. So we're going to have to try to work on that a little bit, you know, and work on that as well. You know, and hopefully the environment for law enforcement changes a little bit. Right now, law enforcement has been cast in a negative light. So with that, the schools that offer criminal justice programs, their enrollments are way down as well. So if you don't have the future coming out of there, you know, the future pool to draw from, when, you know, people are going to retire on one end, you need the other people to fill in the voids. But the hard part with that, and it's even been recognized by the legislator, I know that there's been some proposed legislation that didn't make it through where they would help pay for kids to go to school for criminal justice, or if they go to an agency, pay retention after so long. You know, I think we're going to have to get creative as a whole, not only the sheriff's office, but our state and our legislation as well, to try to come up with a solution to get more people to go into the career, and that would help us in the long run, I think, on our pool and whatnot. Our retention has always been pretty good at the sheriff's office on the field ops side. You know, the thing is we have, it seems like you have a group of people that retire. You know, there's a group that I work with, there's four or five of us that are the same age, so when the time comes, we're all going to retire at the same time, you know?
Yeah, it's probably going to happen around here at some point, too.
Yeah.
So I want to shift our conversation. I mean, a lot of national focus has been on school shootings, mm-hmm. and school safety, and Beltrami County is no stranger to this type of violence with the Red Lake school shooting in 2005. And it seems like it was just yesterday, mm-hmm. but the years keep growing, actually. Yeah. But what are your thoughts on how to keep our students safe? What is law enforcement's plan in the event such something that horrible happens?
You know, and what we've always done is we offer the schools training. You know, we have to work and coordinate with them to make the facility safer, you know, come up with a safety plan. You know, for most buildings or stuff, you want to have one entrance and other egresses, but when you egress, you can't come back in, you know, because it makes your security. If you have one point where they enter, you're more likely to see someone coming. You know, and in the city of Bemidji, they have school resource officers. We have a couple schools that are rural that do not, but we have an officer that goes there and teaches DARE and stuff like that. But, you know, we have a couple people that are specially trained in ALICE training, which is a way to respond to that and what to do if an incident happens. And I know that we do some training with them as well, too, that to because if you don't know what to do when something happens, you're going to freeze. But if you have a plan, that's what you're going to fall back on and how you're going to respond. You know, and there's been things that you know, the things have been learned from other incidences that can be applied to try to make it safer and hopefully minimize the damage, you know.
Right. And gun violence is another thing that keeps popping up. I check those blotter reports every single day. What are your thoughts about what's going on criminally in our area as far as the uptick in some of these sort of violent crimes?
You know, a lot of it's driven by the drug trade or by drugs, you know, and gangs as well, you know. And I think right now with the way things were with COVID, the drug numbers and the number of people that we're using and the quantity coming into our area, I mean, people are having larger quantities of drugs they're bringing into our area. I mean, it used to be that if you stop someone, you got an 8-ball, which is, you know, 3.2 grams, it was a big deal. Now people are getting ounces and pounds from traffic stops. So there's a lot more coming in. And if you're dealing drugs, you have to protect because you have a lot of money and you have a lot of the drugs that are worth a lot of money as well. So they carry guns to protect themselves. And unfortunately, things get territorial and, you know, you can have gun violence there as well. People, you know, what's a better target if you're a drug user than is to rob someone who is selling drugs? You get money and you get drugs. I mean, a couple of our last homicides, a lot of our homicides are drug related as well, where is a robbery that's gone bad or, you know, things have taken a turn. So.
All right. And what are your thoughts on some of the, like, how many guns are on the streets? Like, does the sheriff's office have a goal to remove some of these illegal firearms?
It's always, I don't know if you'd call it a goal, but our goal is to make our community safer, and that entitles taking guns off the street. For the time that I've done this for 25 years, one of the big things is criminal interdiction, which means that you make contact with people, and if you locate guns or drugs, you have to, you know, deal with them and try to be proactive in taking them off the street. Because a lot of times if you're a drug dealer, like I said, you have a large quantity of drugs, they also have firearms, and most of those firearms are stolen or, you know, untraceable firearms. So you get them off the street, you make it safer. But unfortunately, usually there's a vacuum and someone comes in behind and fills the void, they get another gun. But
so going forward, if you are successful in your campaign, what do you see as some of the biggest challenges to the Beltrami County Sheriff's Office?
It comes back to the jail. Our jail is an older facility. It's one of the, it's designed kind of poorly so that it takes a lot. It's very staff intensive to watch the inmates. There's certain rules the DLC has under the 2911 rules that says you have to have so many inmates per COs per inmate based off of the facility or the layout of the area that they're watching the inmates. And in ours, at the time it was built, was state of the art, and now it's not. We could watch a lot more staff or a lot more inmates with our current staff if we had a different facility. And also, you know, it's getting old. It's 30 years old. You know, so it eventually needs to be replaced. And you know, the last thing we want is the Minnesota Department of Corrections. They can come in and say that your facility's unfit, and they can give you what's called a sunset date, which is 36 days from the time they order that, which would give you not a very long time. I know we've been dealing with our jail committee and trying to be thorough with this. It kind of makes you speed track things and not be as thorough as we are in the process. So we don't want that to come. And I know that we have a good group of people for all of our committees that are working hard to come up with a good solution that's financially feasible.
Well, any other thoughts about your campaign you'd like to share with us before we wrap it up today?
I guess one of the things that I would like to say is that it takes a community to deal with law enforcement issues. It's just not law enforcement. We need the help of the community. And when it comes to doing projects or coming up with ideas to think outside the box, as far as, you know, maybe offering something in the jail or something like that, you have to work with county leaders. And one of the things I've been fortunate in my role as chief deputy is I've worked with the head of human services, a lot of her supervisors. I've worked with Tom Berry, our administrator, and I've had the ability to build those relationships and with outside entities as well from people in the private sector. And we've come up with some solutions. And I think that I have that experience and the network to do that. And I've also, we have to work with other sheriff's offices. Like, you know, I don't know if I said it before, but I've said it throughout my campaign, is that we have to do this regionally as a law enforcement, you know, fighting the drugs, the guns, because they cross jurisdiction lines. And I've been fortunate to be given leadership opportunities within our region with the Northern Lights Task Force. I chaired a committee for communications and for technology. One of the things that drives me, I'm kind of a nerd, is I like technology and I like numbers, which is kind of a double-edged sword. But it's one of those things that I chaired that committee, and there was, I think, 13 counties, the State Patrol, the DNR. And I was actually recognized by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety Emergency Communication Network for my leadership in that role. So it's one of those things that I think I offer a lot of experience. I have a lot of good connections and networks. And I think that I could do a good job keeping the sheriff moving forward. I've been doing that for the last 3.5 years. I've been working with the sheriff to hopefully keep us moving forward. We can't get stagnant in what we do, and we always got to try to think outside the box to make things better.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me today, Jarrett Walton.
Thank you.